You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I want to get to a stat of the day here in a second, but before I do that, because of everything that just happened with Scottie Pippen, it reminded me, we didn't even get to the questions. He didn't like the Last Dance documentary. We immediately backed off as soon as Stugatz asked his MJ question, and he leaned in and he said, I'm here to promote digits. I'm here to let's talk about my bourbon. And it reminded me of some of the sound that we stole from ESPN here a long time ago of the Stugatz uncomfortable moment where he tried to trick Michael Strahan. But Michael Strahan is from New York, my friend, and he is not going to have that.
Mike, you're in the news a lot lately because of your divorce and what seems like it's a ridiculous amount of money.
If we're going to talk about football, I was told I'm talking about a Pepsi smash and football, then we can talk about that. But I don't want to get on it. Just like I don't talk to the papers about that,
right?
Because I'm not going to give somebody something so that they can make more news. And I prefer not to do this to make your show get any better ratings than I'm sure it already gets.
I was just gonna ask if you're tired of talking about it. I guess the answer is yes.
I don't talk about it. And I was told I wasn't going to talk about it on the radio. And you're going to try to come out of left field and kind of get me with it. But I'm from New York, my friends. I do radio all the time. And I'm going to shut you up before we even go there, before you ruin this rosy relationship that you and I have.
Fair.
So before we go there, let's talk about the Pepsi smash and the whole reason that I agreed to talk to you.
Fair enough, Michael. Fair enough. Just was going to ask if you're sick of it. Apparently you are. Pepsi smash.
You know what? You got to... Like I was saying, ask me about the Pepsi. Don't go. I'm going to ask. It doesn't matter what you were going to ask me. I'm telling you what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Pepsi Smash and how it's going to be great, how us as players, we enjoy going. We enjoy being around the musicians, and because we're big fans of theirs, and hopefully they're big fans of ours. And there we go. Closing of our interview, my friend. You have a great time. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Thank you, Michael. We appreciate it.
There is little better than the my friend that is meant to indicate you are not my friend.
I hate you.
Did you watch the show sort of backpedal when the baritone got bassy, when the voice got bassy and he was like, yep, because he's every time Scottie Pippen says something, he must be so tired about being asked about Michael Jordan in general. But anytime he says anything about Michael Jordan, it ends up in a headline. And I believe he's had the opinion 10 times one way or the other over the last 5 years that LeBron is either better or not better than MJ. And he's not here for those questions anymore. I don't think it's an illegitimate question to ask, though, because he actually invited it when he said what a wonderful scorer he is.
I was so going for the headline there, though. I mean, I was. And Scotty read it, and he blocked me.
As you did with Michael Strahan.
Yes.
And I can hear the hesitation in Stugatz's voice in the beginning of this clip.
Yes.
He's like, I got to ask him about the divorce thing, but I got to work up the courage.
Let's hear it again. Let's hear just the front end of Stugatz's nerves, because it's rare that he feels shame, and I can hear him. I can see him wincing in here.
Mike, you're in the news a lot lately because of your divorce and what seems like it's a ridiculous amount of money.
There it is. Let's do the stat of the day here, please.
Stat of the day, stat of the day. It is the stat of the day.
Start of the day, start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day, start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day, start of the day. It is the start of the day.
There are so many great Jacob DeGrom stats, Dan. This one is from Hembo on Twitter, at Paul Hembo. Pitchers are batting 112 this season. Pitchers. The league is batting 113 versus Jacob DeGrom this season.
That is a great stat. I don't know that you're going to do a lot better than that, but you are right that there are a lot of DeGrom stats that are ridiculous. According to Buster Olney, opposing 1, 2, and 3 hitters, first three batters in the lineup during this season, 6 for 89. That's a batting average of 67. 067. 3 walks, 45 strikeouts, 1 run. That is the other team trying to get off to a good start with its best guys against DeGrom. That is unbelievable. I could keep going. Jacob DeGrom, he left yesterday's game with a career ERA of 2.49 and then a 10.7K/9 and 195 starts. All that matters is that that's the first time that's ever happened. Through 70 starts. Like, you don't even need to know.
No one else has done it.
What the metrics are, no one else has done that. He's now gone 12 straight starts with one or fewer earned run. It breaks a tie with Bob Gibson in 1968 for the longest streak with a single season since earned runs became official. DeGrom hasn't allowed a run in his last 30 innings pitch.
I saw this great stat from Joe Posnanski last night, which was his EHA, not ERA, his earned hit average is 3.38. He lost 3.38 hits per nine innings.
He's got as a hitter 6 RBIs this season.
Yep.
He's allowed 4 earned runs.
Silly.
Oh my God.
Silly. He's so, batting 407.
I wonder what his whip is.
He's 117 strikeouts, 10 walks. That's crazy.
Yes.
You're talking about him and Curt Schilling are the only guys. Curt Schilling in 2002 since 1901 to do 115 strikeouts and 10 walks. To have that kind of command in the age of the pitcher, in that sport, as it gets more and more boring, less contact, offenses as bad as they've been in more than half a century, you got a guy, Stugatz, who I don't know who it was the other day. Somebody, I think it was Jeff Passan, who just put what his first 9 pitches of an inning were, and it was 100, 100, 100, 100, 101, 101, 100, and then slider, 93, 92.
Yeah.
93, 92. So it's like it does it. He's putting the ball exactly where he wants, and he's throwing it harder than just about anybody in the sport.
He's insanely good, and he's fun to watch. They checked him last night. So they had a day-night doubleheader. First game was 7 innings, and he was walking off the mound, and the umps did the first check on Jacob DeGrom for the sticky stuff, Dan. That's what they like to call it.
They're checking a lot of guys, and what you're presently witnessing, like, the stories about Greg Maddux are sort of mythological, right? About knowing the game in a way that is just incredibly uncommon and having a pinpoint accuracy where he could put a baseball wherever it is that he wanted to and knew the game enough. Right, the stories are that he could tell you 2 pitches in advance when a foul ball was going to come screaming into the dugout because of how somebody else was being pitched. What you're presently witnessing from DeGrom is if Greg Maddux threw 100 miles an hour. Greg Maddux did right. That in, you know, yes, the low 90s, high 80s, and Mike Lowell has told us the difference in that sport between 94 and 95 and 100 is 94, 95, you're like, it gets your attention. You know you have to be focused, 94, 95, but you're comfortable or reasonably comfortable as you can be with somebody throwing something that hard in your vicinity. But when it's up in the 99, 100, I can't even explain to people listening to this, if you tried to hit a baseball, how impossible it would be for any of us to make contact with any, to feel anything other than fear. If the ball, I wonder how we would do that how we would make, because fans and media members are perpetually underestimating how excellent these people are. For example, just Stugatz assumed the other day that Ben Simmons isn't practicing stuff in the gym for free throws and shooting.
If he is, there's really a problem. I mean,
there is a problem. There's obviously a problem. But because we don't know how good these guys actually are, I don't know how close you've sat next to home plate when any of these people are throwing a baseball, but 100 miles an hour will make you poop yourself. If any of you were in the batter's box against 100 miles an hour, there's the real chance that we, because we're not used to it, wouldn't even see it. Like, that was happening after Giancarlo Stanton. After Giancarlo Stanton got hit in the face with a baseball, there were times where a pitch would end up in the glove and he was so confused and struggling and trying to get back that he would say himself, as a major league hitter, I didn't see that. I never saw that making an appearance. I believe that if any one of us stood in a batter's box against Jacob deGrom, we might not ever see the baseball.
Like, period? Just we don't?
I think that is absolutely possible, because I don't believe people understand how hard, like, it is widely regarded as the hardest thing to do in sports. Now, I could form an argument on behalf of, as precise as the Drew Breeses are these days and the routes and the route running and the precision offenses, that being a defensive back guarding a wide receiver or a tight end when the quarterback and the tight end know what the play is and you don't, yeah, I can make an argument for that being among the hardest things in sports. But by consensus, people say hitting a baseball is the hardest thing in sports, and this dude is throwing one that is harder to hit than any we've ever seen.
I mean, I agree with you. The people who have trained their entire lives to do this, who are very good at their profession, they can't hit him. So I think I'm with you. We don't see the ball.
I wonder, right? Because we've had these conversations before, how we always, as fans, we always overestimate our own abilities. Like, we've had this conversation with Kirkshin specifically, where he says that if an NBA team didn't want a group of five of us to get the ball, that we'd never score in a game, and we'd have trouble ever getting the ball over half court, because of how good they actually are at what they're doing and they're refining. They're all bigger, stronger, and faster than us by leaps and bounds, and they're spending all of their days over decades perfecting this craft, and we think we're good because we can make a couple of jumpers in a gym.
Do you think if I just put my bat out that maybe there's a chance DeGrom hits the bats by mistake?
I suppose there is a chance, but I believe that it is less than you being struck by lightning twice on the same day. Like, I don't believe that if Jacob deGrom wants for you to not make contact with the ball, that you will ever make contact with the ball.
Now, to entertain your hypothetical, the one thing about deGrom that I guess would be different than other pitchers is you'd kind of mention his complete and utter command. If that's the case, and I'm not afraid of being hit then, I guess. Because if I know he's not going to hit me, maybe I'm like a little bit more in it. Now, I'm not saying that's going to help me. It doesn't help professional hitters.
No, but I'm saying you're doing the rational, and I understand that. What I am saying is, once you get around the speed of 100 miles an hour, the absence of fear that you had when you logically stepped into the box would evaporate quickly. I believe that as soon as you heard it, You would wet yourself. As soon as you heard
I would.
Something flying at you that fast.
And we're assuming that he's going to throw in the strike zone. He can easily throw it away, and you are going to chase that.
I'd like to set some ground rules with DeGrom. Like, hey, nowhere near me, please. I like to not be afraid.
No, he's going to throw it outside. No,
I don't want to be brushed back by Jacob deGrom. If that happens, I'm running out of the stadium. Straight beeline out.
A brush back from DeGrom.
You were just lamenting. You said it ruined your day to have a thimble full of Turkish shot.
Yeah, it did. It did ruin my day. I'm still recovering. I love Scottie Pippen's digits, but the smell is like, just get the smell away from me. Like, I don't want to be near alcohol right now.
I'm on my second.
Roy is drinking vigorously.
Yeah.
His afternoon nap
is going to crush him.
Yes, it is.
Starting is everything when it comes to fitness. Peloton helps you start no matter what level you're at. Wherever you're starting, there's thousands of classes to get you moving. Whether that's beginners or advanced rides, feel-good live DJ rides, or artist-themed rides, they've got something for you. Peloton bike instructors keep you motivated from day one. They'll show you the basics, help take the guesswork out of your workout, and encourage you to build from there. And now with Peloton Entertainment, you can keep moving and watch your favorite TV shows and live sports as you ride. Perfect for those days when you don't want to miss a thing. And if you don't have a bike, take a dance class, take a core class, take Pilates, take a stretching class, start a program with Andy, do a core program with Emma. You can do it all at Peloton. You can get a Peloton row, and you're not even going to get wet because it's inside your own house without water. How'd they do it? I don't know. Wherever you're starting, get moving with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike rentals. Terms apply.
I did not call Scottie Pippen out on it because we were backpedaling and I'm a coward. But when he was talking about team basketball versus individual basketball by way of discussing Kevin Durant's lack of team play and teams beat individuals, the margin on him being able to say that was a sneaker size. And yeah, it was totally random. And we talked a lot yesterday as we dissected both Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons. We talked a lot about the excellence, but we didn't talk a lot about the margin between winning and losing. In a game seven, and you saw all the dead legs out there. His final shot of overtime was not nearly the same as the final shot of regulation. I don't know how basketball players figured out that 48 minutes of a basketball game is too much duress on even the best of human bodies. That there needs to be rest in there, and 48 minutes played consecutively will result in what you saw in that overtime where the Nets, you know, got a basket and the Bucks, basically what you had for possibly the championship of the NBA, possibly in that series, was 5 minutes to decide who's best. Everyone's dead. There is not a leg, not even the referee legs are right.
Right.
Everyone, we are determining the measurement at the end of who gets to win and is Giannis clutch or is it a failed experiment and all that stuff is 5 minutes of random dead leg basketball.
There was a total of 8 points scored in the extra session.
And it was, you saw it. Like, you could physically see that those guys, it's rare that you watch those athletes and they look like they're in molasses. But they were all spent, they'd given everything they could to the cause. One of the things that I found fascinating, though, about the margin for error, as we discussed the details, he's a size 17 foot. You don't know anyone with a size 17 foot. He wears size 18 sneakers, but just for games. Like, when he's walking around, it's size 17 sneakers, but he prefers size 18 for games.
He'll never do that again.
That was the difference in that basketball game. And one of the biggest shots in NBA history was Ray Allen somehow in a panicked situation, knowing because he had practiced it, how to get into a position where his foot wasn't going to be on that line. But the idea that that's the margin for error, and the idea that the margin for error, Stugatz, and this is always fascinating to me, right? Because if the Heat, now I don't know if this would have happened, but if the Heat draw the Knicks in the first round instead of the Hawks, we might be talking about their entire season differently because of a game. Yes, instead of the Bucks, excuse me. We could be talking about their season differently because it seemed like Philadelphia had a weakness that could be exploited, which is a point guard whose value is now plummeting because we've gone from James Harden to yesterday, the conversation all over ESPN. And this one makes a lot of sense to people, is Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum.
Yeah.
It makes sense to people because Damian Lillard is unhappy. It makes sense to people because what the Sixers need around Embiid is a shooter, and Ben Simmons with a shooter would fit better than he does with Joel Embiid because Ben Simmons is trying to cave in your defense, and there's Joel Embiid asking for the ball in the post.
Stephen A. Smith was saying there are certain people that do not want Ben Simmons, certain people in the Blazers organization that don't want Ben Simmons. So I'm guessing that's Damian Lillard.
If right. Ben Simmons is going to be reinvented, it would be with a shooter of Damian Lillard's caliber. It's one of the reasons that that makes a lot of sense to people, even as that's a pretty precipitous drop, I think we can agree, right? That's happened in a few months. Ben Simmons for James Harden, Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum. That's what you just saw. What you just saw is how market value, how quickly it can drop with a young superstar. Doc Rivers did him no favors, or the organization no favors, by answering honestly the question of, can you win a championship with this point guard? He didn't have to answer that honestly, and I don't see what he gains from answering it honestly by saying publicly, I don't know whether we can win with this guy.
Well, someone got to Doc because he came out later and said, hey, we have a plan for Ben Simmons. Like, he's trying to boost the value now and his confidence in case he comes back and he's a Sixer next
year. I believe that was a hurt, emotional coach, too honest for his own good, who made a mistake in a press conference because of how broken he was and because of the specifics of all of the pressure of that city on you as a one seed, and you just watched one of your most trusted pieces disintegrate in a way that made you yourself doubt as the leader of the team whether you can trust him. Like, that's what happened in that locker room, and that's what Stephen A. Smith is giving voice to when he says, and he said it with a bit of pride because he's a Philadelphia guy, he worked in Philadelphia for a long time, that city will not forgive that. He is right about that. I think it's an ugly part of that city. Their fandom is cruel. There's a pride in how mean they can be, because, and they file it under caring, but it can be very cruel.
No doubt, but a lot of fan bases would not be okay with that. I mean, he kind of bailed on the team.
Understood, but it was a moment of mental and human frailty. Yeah. So,
why do you say he bailed on the team, though?
I mean, he himself said, I wasn't really there. I wasn't there tonight.
No, he said he was bad. I mean,
he said he was bad.
Right, okay, he said he was bad, but I think bailing on the team is harsh. Like, he was just clearly, he had a mental block on doing normal basketball things. But I don't think you can question his effort.
Okay, that's totally fair. I'm just saying most fan bases would not be happy with that performance, the way he played in that game. So you're right. That's fair.
Completely no-showed.
And did so in a way that was vulnerable in a city that isn't going to be trusted with that vulnerability. And now maybe most cities wouldn't be, because it's the nature of fandom. It's not... We've seen with the throwing of bottles and throwing of popcorn that there's sort of a disconnect between how human you think your entertainers are. But that was a profoundly human moment or series that you never see your humanity that way from your superheroes. Ben Simmons looks physically and does things physically like no one you've ever met in your life. He's got a set of gifts that... you know, is what a holy man would put in the crib if they were trying to give someone a future in sports. And clearly what happened there was a most human vulnerability of, my mind is weak. Everything about me that you see physically is strong. This is all armor, and it is in peak physical condition.
People have a hard time processing that, how someone with those physical gifts mentally could be weak.
They
do.
You saw it, though, did you not?
Like, of course, everyone saw it.
To me, that's where I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
To me, the reason that reaches me, and none of you are surprised by this, you make fun of me all the time when I extend compassion to people who make millions of dollars, is like, oh my God, how that must suck to be weak in front of that many people and for all of us to see it. Like, consider your weakest moments, whatever you view them, whenever you've wept, whenever you've doubted, whenever it is that you have felt self-loathing, whenever it is you couldn't figure something out, and now put the pressure of a city, the pressure of a locker room, the pressure of a one seed on it, and there's Trae Young or whomever, and he doesn't have this problem. And you look around, and you're inside your own head. You're by yourself with that doubt. You're not speaking it out loud. You're not going to tell anybody about it. And you're looking around, and you're like, why doesn't Danilo Gallinari have this? Why doesn't anybody else out here? Wait a minute. You're going to tell me Herder? Look at him. He doesn't doubt.
He's a first-round pick, Herder.
I know, but just look at him. I know Jokic is good, too, but look at him.
I don't get what you guys are doing there.
Just look at him. that generally doesn't dominate a game seven. To me, whatever was happening in the short circuiting of Ben Simmons' mind was also happening to me as I watched a redheaded guy with freckles dominate a game seven.
I mean, 10 of 18. I doubted
everything I knew. I've been studying this all my life, and I'm confused as he soars through the air gracefully, and he's pale. Pink. And I'm not used to pale, pink, and red dominating NBA basketball games.
A game seven in the playoffs?
A game seven while Ben Simmons can't figure out what it is to do. And the CJ McCollum thing makes a great deal of sense. So too does Stephen A's assessment that that's never going to work in that city going forward because Philadelphia cannot be trusted with that particular vulnerability to forgive.
When you had James Harden, though, it's hard to go down. And CJ's a great player. He's a four-time NBA All-Star. He's a good shooter. He's a good offensive player. He's probably what the Sixers need. But it's hard to go from Harden to CJ McCollum, is it not? Like, you could have had Harden.
That's what you just saw in terms of trade value dropping because he is an above-average NBA player. He's a multi-time All-Star. He is not James Harden.
No.
And they weren't going to trade him for James Harden. And James Harden with Joel Embiid is championship worthy. CJ McCollum with Joel Embiid might be championship worthy. But I think we would all agree that if Philadelphia is playing the Nets and I have taken James Harden off the Nets and given him to Philadelphia, you like your chances Embiid and Harden going against Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like Harden and Embiid, if Harden's healthy.
But it's also the combination, right? It's the combination of what it is that Nick Wright was telling us yesterday about Ben Simmons is particularly ill-suited to play with two guys in the league, Giannis and Joel Embiid. He plays with one of them. And so if you change the pieces around and turn somebody into a superstar shooter, you saw the difference between Philadelphia this year and last year just because they added a couple of shooters. You saw a couple of years ago when Ilyasova was hitting threes for Philadelphia, when they just had a couple. I know Seth Curry is a good shooter, and he's been a good shooter for the last three years.
He's a great shooter.
But yes. There's no disputing that he's a great shooter. But what you saw from him in these playoffs is, that also works very well with Joel Embiid.
Yes. Would Ben Simmons work with the Warriors? Like, if you have Klay and Steph and Draymond, all those guys out, you know, beyond the three-point line, and he's just driving in, because everyone talks about how great he is at creating threes.
It works with shooters, yes. He creates threes better than anyone in the league.
I'm not sure him and Draymond works, though, because Draymond is another one who doesn't get anywhere near shooting. We don't talk about it as much because the Warriors are a little bit off the radar, but Draymond, compared to what he was during the peak run, doesn't shoot at all.
I would also have questions with him and Damian Lillard because you're essentially taking Damian Lillard from a playmaker into a spot-up shooter, and that's not what he is. Like, the reason why Damian Lillard's so good is because he can pull up and do anything from anywhere on the court and not have to be set up.
It's actually really hard to find a trade partner right now because you basically, like, for me, the ideal scenario for Ben Simmons is he gets his own team. He gets to run the floor, he gets the ball all the time, and it all runs through him. And if you look around the league, like, you'd say, just default bad team. The Sacramento Kings. They have De'Aaron Fox. Do you want the ball out of De'Aaron Fox's hands? Like, I don't know where the place for him to go where he can just go run a show, like, other than Detroit.
What's the team that doesn't need shooting? It would be the Golden State Warriors. They had a top pick last year.
They actually do.
Do they really? They're getting Klay back, though. That's going to help.
I know, but they're going to play Wiseman. They're going to play Draymond. Like,
I'm just saying Wiseman's the guy. I mean, Wiseman would be the guy that you would trade if you're Golden State.
From Minnesota.
Before heading down the path of the transaction, though, I'd like to, and I understand why everyone does this, because when in that sport, more than ever, when the superstar becomes someone who's available, everybody wants to get one of those. I'm more interested, though, in the idea of frailty here, and I'm interested in future employers and teammates trusting you after they've seen something like that. What I am telling you, Stugatz, is it is so rare to see a guy stripped down to that in front of you. He can't admit it beyond saying, I wasn't right, I wasn't there, where what you're seeing is fear. What you saw, Joel Embiid physically, you saw his anger when Ben Simmons was under the rim with a chance to dunk and passed as if he didn't want to shoot free throws. And I don't know if people listening to this understand how important in these particular settings, when you talk about all the stuff that you love to talk about with intangibles of chemistry and leadership and everything else, how important trust is. Can I trust you when the pressure's on my neck that you're not going to be afraid? And it's not a question you ask of anybody in that league, like for real, where you actually see it. Like maybe you say, so-and-so, I think he's soft. I think he's a choker, but you never actually get it confirmed. Right. The stat sheet never gives it to you that way. Maybe a guy goes 9 for 24 and you wonder why the hell did he miss so many jumpers? You know, maybe James Harden has a game 7 where he misses 10 of 12 threes, but it's not, it's never that overt. Where everyone can smell the fear.
Yes. And the stat line is just dreadful. It's 5 points. And you could feel it. Like, he doesn't have to say anything, but it's emanating off of him. You could feel that he is fearful of the moment. He doesn't want to be out there. He doesn't want to take a big shot.
It's never that obvious. He didn't want to take any kind of shot. It's not a big shot.
Any shots, you're right.
And his fourth quarter stats, he made 3 baskets because he took 3 shots. Super efficient. Fourth quarter stats throughout that series, 3 for 3. And I'm guessing they were all dunks.
And didn't take any shots in the last 4 games in fourth quarters.
It just never looks like that. And your season ends in that city, cruel, with the loss of faith of your teammates, and there ain't another game tomorrow. You got to stay with that for months. There ain't no fixing that tomorrow. There's no fixing that in a gym 6 weeks from now. Like, you're alone with that, and no one can help you. Not sports psychologists. There is no one that can help pull you out of that. Now is when you will find out. When people talk all the time about learning about things in sports, Stugatz, when they talk all the time about the idea of mental strength in sports, you will rarely see it tested the way that Ben Simmons is going to have it tested right now. This is absolutely something that he will either be made better by, or it will crumble his career from here. Like, that's where the test is, because there ain't nothing wrong with his body. There's nothing. This is not injury, James Harden. Everybody was playing hurt. There was nothing wrong with that dude physically. All of the injuries this postseason in the NBA, an unprecedented amount, and there is none more curious or more crippling than the one that Ben Simmons just endured.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Stugatz, would you agree that Ryan Kerrigan is a bit of a menace? A bit of a menace.
100%.
Yes, okay. Yes. He was in Sharknado 3, Oh Hell No. And I have a lot of questions. Look at how
That's
proud.
Your opening
he,
line?
Look at how proud he is there.
He should be.
How did this come to be? What happened? Were you a big fan of the first two Sharknados and you said, I have to call my agent and be a part of this?
I said, you know, they filmed the third one in Washington, D.C., and they used the local, Comcast Sports affiliate, their office there to film some of the scenes. And I had known, I'm good friends with one of the guys that works over there. And so he was able to get me and a couple other guys on the team, some small roles in the movie. So that was pretty cool.
Any highlights you can tell us about? Any memorable moments? Like, you're well aware that the movies are unrepentant garbage. And what happened?
Whoa, wait a minute. Insulting him.
What, excuse you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's news to me. I mean, I was I was waiting for my my Academy Award. That's what I you know. But unfortunately, that call never came.
Brian, I was having this conversation just the other week where I was talking to a firefighter, and I don't know how you are, but I drive down the streets often. I see fire trucks, I see firehouses, I see very few fires. So I was asking, how many times a week, how many times a shift do you deal with actual fires? And they're like, well, you know, it depends on the season, but I run into a fire maybe once, twice a month, an actual fire, right? And I said, well, that's just like Sharknadoes. Fires happen all the time, all over the world, and we never hear about them. You'd have to think that a Sharknado has happened or does happen semi-frequently, and we just don't hear about them.
I mean, made the movies for a reason. They're something to be reckoned with, and I think, you know, I think the more awareness we can bring to them, I think the more people we can help.
Would you describe yourself, your football style as Sharknado? You are the embodiment of Sharknado.
I mean, I hope so. It'd be kind of, I mean, I, you know, it just sounds like a lot of chaos and a lot of, yeah, you know, a lot going on. So hopefully that's what the opposing offense is thinking when I'm playing.
Jessica, what was that advanced stat you gave us the other day? A havoc factor or what was it?
Havoc rate.
Are you familiar with the advanced stats? Do you know what your havoc rate is? My guess is you'd be someone who would aspire to have a plentiful havoc rate.
I do not. I haven't heard of that advanced stat before, but I mean, I'd love to learn more about it.
It's a great stat. I mean, havoc rate.
How can you not love that as a stat? I don't know how it is that you measure these things, but when you've played for 10 years in the league, I mean, you are somebody who enjoys his havoc, right? Like you're somebody that's who you are.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of being on the defensive line, playing on the line of scrimmage. You want to play in the opponent's backfield and just make their day as long as possible and wreak as much havoc as possible.
Well, you've created some here because Roy, I don't know if you guys are going to fight about this, but we have said before that Roy, I believe his favorite food. This is correct. Yes. Your favorite food of all foods is?
Cool Ranch Doritos.
Yeah.
Oof.
What?
I mean, to each their own. I know they're popular, but never have been mine. Never been for me.
You're being too gentle about this. You hate Doritos, and are you afraid of beefing with Roy about Doritos or having this opinion be too public?
I'm not trying to bash any chips or anything. I'll just say this: they've never have been for me, and they never will be for me.
And why is that?
Yeah, explain yourself.
I don't know. I think just the smell. Like I don't know. Like whenever someone eats Doritos, you can definitively tell, like, oh, that person just ate Doritos. Like, it's kind of
such a good point.
Yeah. But that's a badge, like though. I mean,
it's okay. Have you had a Dorito?
I don't think I've had a Dorito. I think I had a Dorito like in like first or second grade, and that was my first and last. It was not again.
It was a bad experience. You had a bad. I didn't feel like anybody.
It's just a Dorito.
Who's ever had a bad experience with a Dorito?
Nobody.
It was. I don't know. I just did not like the taste, and ever since, I just was like, no thanks, not for me.
Do you like other tortilla chips, or this is like a strictly Dorito thing?
Oh, I almost exclusively Doritos. Like I love tortilla chips, like, you know, chips and guac, all that, you know, I love that, but just, I don't know, like the cheesy stuff, like on the Dorito, like, no, I don't like that.
Would you be willing to revisit it? Perhaps you'd like them now. Perhaps we'll do it for charity.
Yeah, charity. Yes. Look at that, for charity. Could we get you to do it for charity, or is your disgust so strong that you will be against charity?
I mean, if it's for charity, I mean, I guess I have no choice but to eat Doritos. But you know, if it ain't for helping people, then no thanks.
Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo. Have you lost respect for Ryan Kerrigan because of his opinion on Doritos? At Levitard Show. By the way, he is now with the Philadelphia Eagles. Was that in any way difficult for you, given the allegiances you have a decade with a team that does not like the Philadelphia Eagles?
It was different at first to kind of, you know, come to the realization like, man, this is the best fit for me, you know, now being with the Eagles. And yeah, that was a bit strange just because of, you know, I've been playing against them for 10 years, but in the opposing team, but I'm excited for the opportunity, and when my visit there went really well, and I really have felt throughout my short time there that I made the right choice.
It is said of Jonathan Ogden that he could have played, you know, holding a cup of coffee in one hand and never spilled any blocking. Jason Taylor, Hall of Famer, says of Tony Baselli that he would just get stuck in his navel all the time, didn't really have a chance. Give us a time that Ryan Kerrigan was playing and he's like, I mean, this is just unreasonable. This guy is too strong. He moves too well. None of what is happening out here is fair.
You know, played with a guy in Washington for a long time, Trent Williams, that, you know, he's now with the Niners, just got paid a ton of money to stay playing for them. And that guy, I mean, he's as athletic as they come, and he's 320 pounds. I mean, he would be that for me. And I imagine a lot of guys, especially guys that played in Washington, because you're going against him in practice, and his ability to recover is second to none. Cause you think you have him beat on the edge and he somehow recovers, and it's impressive. And so I'd say he would be that for me.
Who's somebody whose strength surprised you?
Strength. I'd say some strength that surprised me would be some of like the running backs you face. Like, you know, you think running back, you don't necessarily think a big, powerful dude, but those dudes can provide a punch. And so on some of those, you know, chip blocks that you get when you're going against the tackle and they come and chip you, those will surprise you. And I don't have one guy in particular, but I would just say as in general, the running backs are a little stronger than you want to give them credit for initially.
Are you someone who wanders around quoting Will Ferrell from his movies, or are you just someone who enjoys Will Ferrell movies?
I mean, I definitely the quotes for us certainly make their way into the lexicon, I'd say a good amount. I wouldn't say any more than anybody else, but yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of his.
Do you have some favorites? Like, what are you most likely to unleash if you're just sitting around talking because you're such a big Will Ferrell fan?
Well, a couple of them I'm not really allowed to say, but some of the...
You can. You know, we're free.
Some of the language.
As long as you're not going to get in any trouble with society, I don't think Will Ferrell does that kind of humor. So you can let it fly here. We're in an unrestricted zone. We're a free area.
In semi-pro, when he has the one teammate from Lithuania, Vakaitis, And he tells him, you know, don't shoot the ball or don't shoot the ball at the end of this play or something, because if you hit this basket, I got to buy the whole stadium corn dogs. And Vakaitis shoots it anyway and scores the 2 points. And because of that, you know, Jackie Moon has to buy the whole stadium corn dogs. And so after that play, Will Ferrell tackles Vakaitis and is like, damn it, Vakaitis, learn English. And I'd say that one's up there at the top.
Everybody,
for me.
Everybody love everybody. Am I right, Ryan?
Yeah, ELE.
You will be hearing from Chris Cody in a moment. We're going to drop the hammer at the end of this interview. But before we get there, a couple of serious questions based on things in the news here over the last few days. Cole Beasley has been a very public anti-vaxxer, saying he's going to live his life. Your former team in Washington has a lot of guys not interested in that. Do you have an opinion about what you're seeing over there?
Not really. I know that team's doing from what I saw, I mean, I don't, you know, keep up with them like I used to, obviously, because I'm with Philadelphia now, but I saw they had brought somebody in to try to explain some things to the guys. So I think that's good to get as much information as possible. And that's all you can really do, is just try to provide guys with as much information as you can.
So you didn't have any reaction to Cole Beasley saying flatly, I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to be told by anybody how to deal with a vaccine.
Not really. I haven't really been on social media too much. So I must have missed that.
That's allowed.
Yeah.
You heard the news though, Carl Nassib of the Las Vegas Raiders. How did that arrive at your doorstep? And do you view that as game changing? And how do you imagine he's going to be received?
I think it's going to be business as usual for guys. Cause I mean, I think guys are going to be, as long as he's doing his job, coming to work and, you know, just in playing ball, I don't think, you know, anyone's really going to, you know, bat an eye to the, he's going to be accepted no matter what his, know, what his preference is. And I know I've been watching him for a long time. Dude's a hell of a player. He's a beast at Penn State. And I'm happy that he's able to, you know, because I can imagine that would be a big thing to get off his chest. So I'm glad he's able to, you know, to do that and be able to live more freely, I'd imagine now. So good for Carl.
We're about to drop the hammer here. We warned you that this was coming at the end of the interview, and I'm hoping that this has the payoff that we expect it to have. Is everyone ready?
I have bet his answer is going to be yes.
Okay, well, I'm not sure that that's how Chris Cody asked the question. He presumes it's a yes, and he boxes people in with this question.
Ryan, how many times have you pooped yourself trying to lift something heavy?
I don't think any.
Very disappointing.
Oh,
very disappointing. I mean, it is. It's very.
At least we didn't build it up.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
a shitty.
Maybe
answer.
I'm not lifting heavy enough though. Maybe maybe I'm not moving enough weight. Maybe I should like up the weight and see if that, you know, that comes as a result.
Well, take the lifting out of it. Have you pooped yourself?
Oh wow. Okay. Wow. A follow up.
Just wondering.
An elaboration. Have you ever pooped
I mean, a long time. The last time I remember was very long time ago.
Okay.
But yes.
Okay.
I have.
Well, we good. Pinned him down.
I feel like,
we pinned you down, and we wouldn't let you go here with your dignity intact. Ladies and gentlemen, Ryan Kerrigan is someone who shits himself. He has done it. We now know that that is true. Thank you for being on with us, sir.
Years ago.
It was a long time ago, but it is indeed true. Thank you, and good luck in Philadelphia, sir.
Months ago.
Last week.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.